Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. Our show tonight, Dialysis Advocates, is brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit, taking place at the end of July every year in Washington, D.C. Our show, as I said, tonight is concerning dialysis and all the mess that is going on in there. Your host is Arlene Mullen. Arlene, good evening.
Good evening, Marty, and I wish to thank you for allowing us this time to get this out. Yeah. We have a case that we're beginning to see more terminations, which we have been discussed many times on the show. But now we have a hospice. We have a family that they forced their auntie to be on hospice without any kind of notification or permission from the family. I'm going to introduce Patty Martin. And Patty, if you go and tell us a little bit about yourself and your aunt and what has gone on.
Hey, my name is Patty Martin, and I'm here to tell a story about my aunt Edna Mosley and what actually happened. And first, I'm going to give you a little bio about Edna. Edna, you know, she was a retired. She was and worked for municipal government, and she retired 34 years. And shortly after retirement, she got was diagnosed with dementia, and also she had to get on dialysis. So oftentimes, my aunt, you know, she once she got on dialysis, you know, her fistula would actually have issues with bleeding. So this past time, my aunt ended up in the hospital at Wake Forest Baptist Hospital after being transferred from Cone and hospital in Greensboro. She ended up there in Winston, and she was taken up, and they at the beginning they started, you know, doing dialysis and performing dialysis on her. And every meeting that we would have, you know, they would ask me, you know, are you planning on taking your aunt home? That answer would be yes. We plan, we have caregivers, we have people to take care of her. And then the next question would be, do you want hospice? The answer would be no. So eventually my aunt, you know, we'd have like a rotation of doctors coming in and out of the hospital. And the last set of doctors, we had had a meeting with him, and he told me he thought my aunt was dying. And I said, well, can you please tell me why you think that my aunt is dying? Do you put a G tube in her? You've checked the external fixture off her leg. So could you please inform me why you think that she's dying? He said, you know, for her kidney. She has a chronic kidney disease. I said, but you know, my aunt's only been on dialysis about 5 years. And he was like, so I said, I'm tending to disagree with you because the only thing that she has hooked up to her is a G tube. And I said, you know, I kind of know my aunt, you know, and she's stronger than what you think. And he says, well, we can agree to disagree. And, you know, in that particular meeting, he was like, well, what would you do when I take your aunt off of, when she has no place to go for dialysis? What will you do? I said, I will research and try to find information to try to find what I need to do to keep my aunt alive. And in the course of this meeting, you know, he was kind of adamant about, you know, thinking that my aunt needed to go off dialysis. So that after that meeting, my aunt started, her fistula started bleeding one night as the staff came in to turn her. And they had the rapid response team, and we were promised, like, repeatedly that they were going to fix this fistula on her arm for the stop the bleeding. We were promised that happened on a Thursday. We were promised on that Friday that they would actually go in and repair her fistula or put a catheter in her chest. So Friday that didn't happen. Then the weekend came. So we were told Monday. We were told Monday that they would do that surgery and perform and put a catheter in her so she could get dialysis. That didn't happen. On Tuesday, we were told we would get dialysis, that they were going to do dialysis. They're going to put a catheter in her and try to fix the fistula. That didn't happen. So at 2 o'clock, we were called into a meeting. Now it's going on 6 days that my aunt has been in this hospital and has not had dialysis, but she was having dialysis prior to that while there. She was there for about a month and a half. So after the meeting, and we had a meeting, and he brought a nephrologist in, and he said, you know, your aunt is no longer a candidate for dialysis. I said, but that's not what you told him. My Aunt Margie was there also, who helped with, take care of my aunt. And we are all, both of us are power of medical for my aunt. And we told him plainly we wanted her to continue with dialysis, and we wanted her to have the catheter placed in her chest in order for her to be able to receive dialysis. He did none of that. He said, you know, she's no longer a candidate. I'm not going to put a catheter in her, and your aunt's going to be discharged. And my aunt Margie was like, discharged? That's not what you said. You've lied to us repeatedly about putting a catheter in her. And not to mention that, and also there was this incident where they had security at my aunt's door. Why, you know, you're talking about my aunt not actually being able to exist or be alive, and you're talking about security because I kissed my aunt on her forehead, and you had security standing outside of her door, and even once upon a time there was a security guard standing at the edge of her bed, and it was a couple of us from the family that were in there, and we were asked, why are you standing at the edge of her bed? He's like, I'm told to keep eyes on her. Or what? Even my pastor could not come in and pray in private over my aunt without security standing at the door. And I think this was all probably an intimidation factor, because once I contacted patient relations and told them, hey, this is absurd. Why are you have security on my family, you know, and everybody that comes at the door, you know, everybody that comes in the room. So they continued to place security at the door. They never once took them off. And they eventually, the patient relations told me that the medical staff wanted the security to remain at the door. So I don't know if that was a doctor, Hong, or who, but they, the whole time. So what we did is, after, you know, he told me, he said, I'm going to discharge your aunt. And this was the sixth day. My aunt hadn't had dialysis. And he says, we're going to discharge her. And so I contacted and I did an appeal. And after the appeal for 2 days, it fell. Medicare did nothing to help it. And so after that appeal failed.
Well, I just want to interject in some of this, Patty, was the fact that when we were contacted, you know, when we were contacted on her, it was like, I think, go to where they had an ambulance. They were going, and they were going to dump her.
Right, and that's what I was getting to.
Yeah.
At the end, when that appeal fell, they got an ambulance, they called, and they had an ambulance come, and they actually had signed papers with my name on it that I said I gave them consent, verbal consent, but I did not. I told them that we would be there to pick up my aunt. And at before, but I didn't say, hey, sign my name on anything. At all.
Well, I think, Patty, because we want to keep this straight, and I hate to interrupt, but the point was they were going to release her and asked you where to take her, where you wanted to take her. So they were, and my feeling working in this field for so long is that they wanted her not to die at the hospital. It didn't matter where she died, but it wouldn't be in that hospital. I think we got involved on the eighth day.
Right. On the eighth day when she was discharged, and that's when the ambulance, you got involved on the sixth day. On the eighth day, she mm-hmm. was discharged. And
but they were going to discharge her on the seventh, right?
Right, and then they had the appeal, and
yeah.
it came on the eighth day. And they had an ambulance that they wanted to know where. We had a private ambulance taker, and they wanted to know exactly where we were carrying her or where we were taking her. And I'm like, this is private, so why do you even need to know? You didn't want to take care of her here and dialyze her. So we took her to another hospital, and my aunt was able to get dialyzed through the same system that they said was broken. And today, my aunt is still at that same hospital, and she has a catheter that's been put in, and she's been dialyzed. After they tried to send my aunt home to let her die without any dialysis location, anything to help her at all. So, you know,
May I ask, did the hospital try to guardianize her or in any way take control of her health care?
Basically, they overlooked what we said as the POMs, like me and my aunt were Power Medical. They disregarded anything that we said.
Okay.
Like we said,
so
which
with the hospice,
illegal.
Yes. And so with the hospice thing, when you objected to hospice, they didn't put her in hospice, did they?
No. They just sent her home with no plan.
Okay. If they ever try that again, if they ever try to put her in hospice again and you have the medical power of attorney, the nurses stationed at that hospice center has to have on hand, they have to have on hand the forms allowing you to revoke hospice, and you can take her out of there immediately. And so as long as you haven't got a guardian in place that's, you know, superseded you for controlling her health, you can, even if they put her in, they've got to have that form on hand, and they must give it to you immediately.
Right.
Well, the thing is, Marty, is that with hospice, technically she was on hospice. They refused to dialyze her. And that is an important thing for people to know, that they can counter it. But what they did is they, in my opinion, was trying to get rid of her and let her die somewhere else, because she was – it's a miracle she's even alive. So it was definitely – didn't listen to the family. Family had no rights.
That
and we're finding a lot of this in dialysis, because they make less money for patients that aren't well. But even though they caused the illness, and I do think that graft that they put in, the lifeline that the blood flows through, it was shoddy. I think they just could not fix it, didn't want to fix it, and just let her bleed to death. And she almost bled a couple times out, didn't she,
yes.
Patty?
Yes, it's happened several times. You know,
and they never addressed it. So
yes.
I think that when we got involved, and we've done it one and another trick, though, too, Marty, because I never knew that they had those at the nurse's station. So that's something that I can tell patients. But we've done it once before. The family has no other choice. The only hope they had was to get her out of that hospital. They didn't ask. They just said, she's gone.
That's
with nowhere to go. And I think that was just so she didn't die in the hospital, where they would have had a huge inspection.
Right.
But technically, to me, when they say hospice, she was on hospice. They were just letting her die. 9 days with no dialysis, I am surprised she was even alive.
Yes, because they actually kept pushing that time out. And saying, hey, we're going to put a catheter in, or we're going to dialyze her. And they never did. So they waited and waited till it was like 6 days out.
It's too late. And I think it was 9 days.
And at the end, it was bonded.
The beauty is of this is she's doing well. We can place her in. But I also warned Patty that the ESRD networks would be involved, that when you talk to the social workers, the oversight, it goes automatically to the network. Now, the network wanted to know everything that's going. You were asked, Patty, weren't you, on, or your aunt, on how what all happened?
Right, right, at the, from a social worker.
Right, who went and told it to the network, and we were talking about that, and I no sooner got home, and they called, didn't they?
Yes. Yes, they did.
But, yeah, and it was like they want to know everything, and this is an industry that is policing itself, but the beauty of this now is I've always believed give someone one chance. Let the all the CEOs and whatever know when the patient's terminated. And if you do nothing, who is helping you now?
No one, no one but you.
But Martin Luther
and,
King's group.
And yes.
So
yes.
We're just going to start turning all these patients who are terminated over to civil rights.
Right. Because she was sent home, with they actually were feeding her up until they were saying that she was dying, but they were actually feeding her with her G-tube all the way up until the end, but not giving her the care or rejecting her from getting the dialysis against the family's will.
There's one thing, too, didn't they, if I remember right, don't let me put words in your mouth, but I remember where they were telling you, because you wouldn't allow your aunt just to die, that they called you cruel, vicious, and what else?
They didn't say cruel,
mean.
Vicious. They were just kind of like very adamant about, you know, what are you going to do? Angry, like, because I didn't agree that she should go in hospice. And basically, the pure threat kind of is like, what will you do now? What will you do now that she can't get in a dialysis center? Because I'm not going to recommend her to be in a dialysis center. So what will she do now? Or what will you do now?
And
okay,
if the
Patty, let me
doesn't
ask
recommend.
You this. Okay, go ahead, Arlene.
Well, no, you go ahead. I already forgot. It's my age.
Okay. Patty, when you moved her to another hospital, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And
correct.
What was their reaction when they got her?
Oh, wow. When they got her, they were like, and that goes back to one of the social workers, when they got her, the same catheter, the first day we took her to get dialyzed at the same hospital, and they used the fistula on her arms to dialyze her, but now she's back to that same hospital because it started bleeding, and, you know, they were, like, amazed that she hadn't been dialyzed. Why didn't
mm-hmm.
they dialyze her? Why didn't they have a plan for you? To do something or take her somewhere, they were not supposed to let her go without having a plan.
Right. Right. You know, we've had these cases where these hospitals decide that they're, you know, that they're the last word and they're just done. And if you don't do what they want, they take the, usually it's an elderly person. And they, when you said they sent it, brought an ambulance for her, and I thought, oh God, no, because they will take and dump them at bus stops, at homeless shelters. I mean, they do some of the cruelest things I have ever heard. And it scared me when you said that an ambulance came. Oh, no. You know,
yeah,
I was surprised when. Yeah,
they had their own ambulance that they had called and their service. And they were going to take her, I guess, they were going to take her home. But we had a private ambulance take her to get dialysis. And they were very adamant,
good,
calling me in my mind about, what time are you picking her up? What time are you coming? Why are you changing? Why are you not using our service? You know, Why are you being so secretive? What's the location? Where are you taking her? Those are the questions that they were asking us.
Well, what in the hell did they care? They were putting her out of their hospital without care.
Yes.
Because
it's
a huge, it's going to be one of the cases that I that is going for civil rights. And it is a civil rights, and I think we're getting ready for civil rights. But it's really sad as a nation when we feel someone's life is of no value. But we've done that once before, taken, and I think it was one other patient they put on hospice, and the only chance you have, like I told Patty, is to go to another hospital. She's in critical condition. They have to treat her. But didn't she have awful bed sores too?
Yes, she did. And yes, she does. And when she got to this hospital, they were like, wow, what is her bed sores are terrible, where they did not turn her. They did not get her up out of the bed. They kind of just let her lay dormant there with nothing. And she has the most awful sores, wounds. And she's actually getting wound care at this hospital.
Oh, my God. Is there any chance you can sue this hospital? I mean, this goes beyond just, you know, we missed
Marty,
a few things. This is intense.
Civil rights is going after this.
Yeah.
Civil rights is going to sue on this because this is, it just is not a way to treat any human being. It's like dogs get treated better.
Yeah.
Than some of these patients.
Yeah. Wow, this is just, I'm just stunned hearing this. And every time I hear this stuff, I think it can't get any worse, and then it always does. And, but this is just, and I think what you're highlighting here is the fact that at the hospital, in a hospital, many times you're in more danger from that hospital than you are anything else. What this doctor, I'd be filing against him. I mean, I would, for lying to you to begin with, and then just unceremoniously trying to dump her, and going to send her home. And basically it has to do with their stats, their reporting stats. They didn't want that death on their books.
Well, they also lie. And that's the part that gets me. I was talking, to the patient relations and to their risk management. And I said, you're dumping that patient, you know? And then Amy said she never talked to me, but she's on a recording.
Oh, good Lord.
So how can they, I mean, where do these find these people at? And what kind of a society are we that we would watch this happen and just say nothing?
Right. I think that's one of the things that we questioned. Go ahead, Ann.
It was almost kind of like they just wrote my aunt off. You know, they kept talking about her skills, levels, and sitting in a chair. You know, there was times when we were told that she had sat in a chair. But then when this new rotational doctor came in, Dr. Hong, that she never got back in a chair to be able to be entered into dialysis again. At an outpatient dialysis center.
The part that gets me is I am so grateful. And I think you talked to Reverend, what's the name of the organization again? I'm sorry. We usually use the NAACP or Dr. Caesar. What is the organization that's helping you that Chili got you?
I don't know that organization that Chili got. Chili didn't have any organization helping me. He just introduced me to Reverend King.
That's who's helping you.
Right.
And, you know, from what, you know, our conversations have been, is that they are not going to take this lightly. And they will be with you. or all the reverence will show up. There's got to be somebody that protects these people and get it out in the light of day.
Right.
But, you know, everything is done. If you look at these young people and you approach them with any of these topics, guardianship, dialysis, hospice, any of these things, they have been so conditioned to accept this as okay that they're like, you know, what are you complaining about? Yeah, what's your point? And I guess when you're young,
well,
you think
you've
got forever to live. Yes, yes. And
we should be grateful.
You know, yeah. So what do you, Patty? What do you see as her prognosis now? She's getting dialyzed, and she's at the hospital. They're taking care of her. How do you figure? You know, is she going to be okay at least for a while? I mean,
at least for a while, I think she'll be okay. The real challenge is making sure that she can get back into a center, because right now
have secured, Patty. We have it secured.
Okay.
As soon as she is stabilized, we have a center for her.
Okay. And Patty, when she has to go to dialysis, a family member has to take her, don't they?
Correct. We have a caregiver that takes her to dialysis.
Okay. All right. Wow, this is just incredible. I mean, I just don't understand the point. And it does, Arlene, I have to, you know, for all these stories that we've heard, it all gets down to money. Where can they make the most money off of that patient?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, never mind about their health or their well-being or anything else. It's how much money can we make?
Their chattel, plain and simple.
Yeah.
Their chattel. And when they're of no more use, or their poor care is what we see a lot of, poor care to the point where they won't make Medicare pays according to the star system. Someone like Edna would be considered a poor risk. So it's called feed and weed. You feed certain patients and you weed other patients out. And we have actual documentation where they actually tell the physicians they need to get rid of these patients, and they don't care how they do it. Just get rid of them.
Oh my God.
Now, if that isn't, and that's why we have so many damn terminations this time. The worst one I have to say is Fresenius. Now they have second chance from the networks. Where was the network when this was going on? They had full knowledge of it, and they did nothing until Reverend King's organization started getting involved.
Right.
So,
right.
So it's going to take, I think they can get away with it because they own the paperwork. And I cannot stress this enough. People need to check their paperwork, their medical records, which are their right. But they don't give you all of your medical records. They give you what they want to give you.
Right.
We don't get, I have somebody sent me 500 pages of flow sheets. What are 500 pages of flow sheets?
Well,
where are the social worker notes? Where are the physician notes? Where are the social worker dietitian notes? They just give them run sheets, which are useless. We have them at pump speed, 350, 450. Give them 5 cc's of heparin. That's what you get. And your blood pressures. There is one patient that we are, civil rights is taking over. That is the one that was the FBI document inspector. And this was a Fresenius. And she had $30,000 for a medication with her signature on it, but it wasn't her signature. Just like Patty, she never signed that. They signed it for her.
Right.
Now, if that's not fraud, please tell me what the definition is.
One of the things I found out about medical files, because I've heard other people in other areas complaining about only getting this limited report when they ask for the medical files, they have decided that if the doctor puts notes into your medical file, that file no longer belongs to you. It belongs to the doctor. And
but
this
not
is
anymore.
What they're using.
Not anymore, Marty. Not anymore.
They just came out with that again.
No, I'm not arguing with you. I'm saying I was the one that told you that.
No, I got this from people at the VA. We're talking about the same thing, that they were running into the same thing there, but they just came out, the Congress did, and said no, that if that doctor put a notation in that file belonged
to
him.
Because I was told from our lawyers that that wasn't legal. They just made us think it was legal. So I'm going to check with all those records are yours, period.
Yes. I'm going to check the Federal Register, because if it is legal, it'll be on there.
Right, because from what our lawyers told us, that wasn't so. They may tell you it's so. It was passed by Congress that everything that is written with a patient's name on it belongs to the patient by Supreme Court.
That's exactly the way it should be.
But they don't. And it's on a disk, but they'll download the disk and then give you what they want you to give. And I think I've mentioned before on shows that they'll have 1, 7, 12, 15. And I don't care where anybody learned to count. What is all these other? Now what they're doing is they're having patients sign second chance, even though they're not guilty, to make it not suable. I think I sent you that file where that woman who was terminated for alleged sexually assault, and she reported it. She was told nobody would take her. We got her into Portland, Oregon, but they wanted her to sign. I think I sent you a copy of that, Marty. Over 30 pages, admitting guilt. So she couldn't sue.
Good Lord.
And if she did, then, it was just strictly arbitration. So we had the lawyers call and say, you can't do that. So she only had to sign the 2 pages. They're very sneaky. The networks have come up with second chance contracts. And this is, you were kicked out of a unit due to nothing more than complaining, and you get this contract that you're admitting that you're getting a second chance in another clinic because you failed at the other. You were trouble in the other one, which also takes the patient and makes them the guilty party. And that's the network. We have, I think we had Terry on the show, and I have quite a few others that if they want to live and they want to dialyze, they have to admit guilt. If they want to live, they have to sign that they were guilty in order to dialyze and to live. And we have the actual contracts. These people belong in jail.
Arlene?
Yeah?
Yeah.
I was sipping coffee.
What happened?
Sorry. I don't know. They're doing some kind of cell thing here, and for some reason that you kind of drop the calls or they kind of fade on you.
Wow.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Wow.
So is there somebody else too, Patty? Another 336 number that you'd like to have them say something?
No.
Okay. Well, what does it feel like for you after going through this horror, would you have ever believed this would happen?
No, I would not. I would never believe that something like this would happen at all to anyone. But I know now that it does.
Yeah.
I lived it.
Most like her, Marty was saying, she gave a speech up at Whistleblowers about just this thing, didn't you, Marty? Marty?
Yeah, we just, yeah, I know something's going on here with the line. I don't know what it is, but something. And, but yeah, there,
I
am just stunned. I do too, and we keep trying to warn them. You are taking your life in your hands, going in a hospital, going to the doctor, places that used to be where you went for care and comfort and, you know, medical treatment. Honest to God, they're kidnapping people left and right, this medical kidnap. They're taking even children, medically kidnapping children. And usually they have some rare genetic disorder, and they want to get control of them so they can run experiments on them. And I know it sounds like stuff out of conspiracy theories, but there's too many
verified stories. Well, that's what they call the dialysis.
Stories.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it is. It's so extreme, and it's so far out of the norm, and it is so far away from anything remotely humane that people's minds can't accept it, that we are at this point where we are disposable. We're considered a waste population, and we need to be got rid of. If we're not healthy 100% and working and paying taxes, we have no value.
Well, that or they keep you poor. You know, you pay more in insurance, you pay more for lodging, but your Medicare doesn't go up or whatever. It just is getting to where it's hitting everybody. And it's sad. But I do believe that it will change. Tom Mueller, you know, that was up there that wrote the Whistleblower book. He was at our dialysis panel, and he said, it's hard to believe. He said, I had a hard time believing, but it's true. It's absolutely true what's happening to these people and patients.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so far beyond, just like, you know, Edna. She has value. We all have value. So, Patty, what is your plans once you get your aunt back into the clinics? Is she getting stronger?
She's right now she's weak from not having dialysis for a period of time.
I'm surprised she's alive.
But she's alive.
Right.
Just thankful for that.
See, a lot of that confusion, Marty, is not dialyzing. Your electrolytes are out of whack. And, I mean, even missing 2 days, I used to see patients reading a book, the same 10 pages over and over. Now imagine 9 days without dialysis. I mean, who wouldn't have a problem communicating?
Yes, exactly. Right. Patty, when she gets done there at the hospital, you're going to bring her home, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then you got yourself and your mom and your aunt that will be there to help take care of her. So it's not like she's going home on her own. You know what I'm saying? She's not going home to an empty house. There's going to be people there to care for her. And I would hazard a guess that she's probably going to get far better care there than she has gotten anywhere else. So, you know, she should improve exponentially once she gets home. I think it's hard on anybody being in the hospital because it's a frightening situation to begin with. And after what she has been through, because she had to know they were trying to cause the end of her life. After what she's been through, I imagine that's quite stressful for her.
Correct. We have a group of caregivers that take really good care of Ma, and even when I take her to a doctor's visit, you know, they'll tell me they could tell that she's well taken care of at home. So I have extra help.
That's
you know,
good.
We have caregivers that take care of her.
Wow.
Well, I've never seen a family. I mean, Patty just was all over. I mean, she really was going to take this sitting down. And she fought him and won.
You can feel when something's
I don't know
right.
That.
That wasn't right. You can feel when something's not doesn't feel right. It just wasn't right.
Yeah, but you did
and
something about it, Patty.
That's right.
I mean, yeah. I was amazed because I have a lot of families I work with. A lot of times families don't understand and the patients are left like they're the problem. And I'm telling you, you were two steps ahead of me, you know. But the doctor and everybody else will be, well, I am so impressed with you. I really am. And you must love your aunt a lot. Tell us a little bit about your childhood with your aunt.
Oh, God, you know, my aunt was very, very, very outgoing. She, you know, she always was in the social clubs. We kind of could tag along with her sometimes to do things if we wanted to. She took care and she took care of my grandmother, and she helped take care of her brother, and she's helped take care of some of our great nieces. She's helped take care of a lot of people, and I think that she needed that back, given back to her. You know, she was like in a lot of outside activities. You know, she helped restore old community schools, school buildings, and she worked at the housing authority, you know, helping with low-income housing for people. And she had her own social club event that she was a part of. And for us as kids, you know, it was always something new, and she was always introducing something of some way of you doing something that you needed to do and that you may not want to do, but you were going to do it. So she's that type of aunt, but she, you know, she's very, she's outstanding aunt, and she's a pillar to our family, you know. You know, she's somebody that I kind of looked up to.
Yeah, but she's very, I knew she had to have been very special.
And she
and
loves
I do
fashion.
Think that
loves
she,
clothes.
Pardon?
She loves fashion, she loves clothes, she loves, you know, shoes, clothes. She loves all kinds of accessories, matching different types of things together.
Well, it's going to
have
be
you
nice
ever noticed,
to have her back.
Yeah. Have you ever noticed when it comes to women, there was always a woman relative in their family from their early years, women that are strong and that are movers and shakers, that don't take any crap. There's always this strong, influential woman in their family that had this presence when they were growing up. And I think those women shape us and decide who we are, or help to decide it, help to form us. And but I hear this all the time about, well, it was my grandmother, it was my aunt, it was, you know, somebody in the family. Mm-hmm. And usually the women that had this kind of influence were single, when it was not at all fashionable for women to be single. And personally, I enjoy that life myself, but I like being single.
Me too.
I just, you know, but you know, to hear you talking about her, you know, and I can tell by the sound of your voice, the tone in your voice, this lady had made quite an impression on you. And I've noticed that in several stories, there's many times this influential woman in the family or close to them that influenced who you became. So I think she's probably quite proud of you for everything you've done.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, wow. It's just, And we all hope that we are that woman for somebody else. You know, I mean, we just,
yeah.
We do. We hope that we are that influential. Yes.
Yes, I was thinking in the hospital when I was going through all this, what would she be doing? And I think she would have been just outraged at security at her door, you know, as it was us and they were doing it to her. She would be outraged.
Yeah.
She would get an answer. She would go all the way to get the answer that she needed. That's just her personality and the type of person that
yeah.
she
is. Well, yeah,
like
these
you
women
got
always
too,
go
Patty.
Rambo on you. Yeah, they'll go Rambo on you.
I think you're a spitting image. I've seen you work, Patty. And if it wasn't
well,
for you, she wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
You researched and researched.
Yeah.
Yes.
And isn't that a shame that you have to do that? You have to go to office. Go ahead, honey.
Oh,
yes,
I didn't say anything.
That's
my phone.
I shouldn't have had to do that because when I talked to them about all the different other types of dialysis, they also told me that she wasn't a candidate for any of those.
Oh. Were they nephrologists that told you that?
A new nephrologist that was never in a meeting that or never probably ever had even seen my aunt.
Yeah. So you're talking to people. People are telling you this that are not specialized in that field and shouldn't have been talking about it at all.
Right.
God.
I think it was your hospitalist that started this,
God.
Or am I wrong?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. He's the one I think that actually put her on hospice. And I think, if I've got the time right, Patty, and correct me if I'm wrong, is when you guys started being actively not going to go along with the hospice and the denial of dialysis care. I think the hospice brought in the nephrologist then? Or do I have that
correct.
Right?
Correct. To this last meeting, yes, correct.
Yes, because they had already put her, the hospitalist, from my understanding, put her on hospice. He's a hospitalist. What does he know about dialysis? It's a specialty
correct.
Field. And put her on
because,
there because her life was of no value. And then they bring in a nephrologist to back it up to make it legal. But you know what? It's not legal. They should have dialyzed her. Dialyzed her until the family made that decision. They were executing her, and that's a horrible word to say, but they were.
Yes, correct. Yeah, because he had never, I had never seen him in any meetings. I had never met him before. You kind of see the same faces in the meeting, but he was like the new face in the room. So I'm pretty sure he had never really actively had been involved with my aunt because, you know, she hadn't, you know, at that point he hadn't been dialyzing her for 6 days. You know, she hadn't been to dialysis.
Well, it's a miracle she's alive after 9 days. Nobody can believe it.
Yep.
I think Chili and them put her on the prayer circle.
Right. Yeah,
but
Chili, he's like, he was really amazed with the story of my aunt, and he actually had it on his radio show, too. Such a thing could happen like that, you know, he's like, you know, how does it make me feel now, you know, what do I view it, how do I view it? I will always be skeptical of any hospital now. It's just, I think I will, because I'd never seen anything like this happen before.
Well, just think if you weren't there.
Right.
You know what the outcome would have been. You were a very active family.
Yeah, and he actually, once I believe the fact that God made dialysis to sustain life, not to take away. I mean, he was very, very mad at me. He got very, very adamant about taking my aunt off of dialysis.
which wasn't his decision. They didn't even do an ethics committee. The other patient that we moved to another hospital, they had an ethics committee, but the family wasn't involved. And that's the one that we moved to another hospital that still is alive today.
Well,
so I think that it's long.
And
it's happening. Pardon?
Just for a doctor to tell you repeatedly, too, that, you know, you're waiting and, you know, you're getting off of work and you're waiting to see your aunt be, you know, get a catheter. And then just to keep telling you that I'm not going to do it today. I'm going to do it tomorrow. I'm going to do it the next day. And it never happens. And just to blatantly lie. It's just, that was just wrong. I mean, he just lied repeatedly with no reason. As if me and
well,
my
they
aunt
didn't think that you would. I think, but Mario, don't you think that these hospitals and doctors don't think that there's any accountability? Is why they do it. What's the family going to do? Sue them when they have the records with what they want to put in? This time, they really messed up. They really messed up.
Right.
And this will be an example. Because right now, we just will. We'll give everyone one opportunity to do what's right. Because it's the patient that matters. The principal. I've never risked a principal for a patient.
Right.
So they just get away with it. But if she would have died in the hospital, then they would have had an investigation.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
why
they wanted her out of there.
Okay.
Huh?
We've got a caller on here. We've got a caller on. Your last four numbers are 5041. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes. Is there any documentation of all this was went on? This is Jerome.
Yes. Oh, hey, Jerome, how you doing?
How you doing, Marty?
Yeah.
Does
I'm good.
Like
I'm
a
good.
Lawsuit? Good to hear your voice again. You too, Arlene.
You too.
Yeah, but I want to know how this documented.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Documentation of all of this.
My phone. I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Yeah.
Yes, there's documentation.
Yeah, because it sounds like a medical lawsuit to me.
Well, it is.
Because I can't see that a doctor gonna lead her on like that today, maybe tomorrow. And that's not a medical practice of him doing anything like that. That's unethical of what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know, I've never heard of anything like this in my life. A doctor tell you maybe tomorrow, maybe today. You know, that's like you asking him to do lunch with you. You know,
well, can you imagine 9 days without dialysis, Jerome?
Yeah, but when they do that, only thing they stress is about that is how much water you drink. They scare you not to drink water with those 9 days that you're missing dialysis. As long as you don't drink that much water, you're fine. I went 11 days without dialysis with the power outage. All I had to do was wash my diet, my fluid, and that was no problem.
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions coming to that. About this, about that dialysis thing, they make sure you don't drink more. That's their issue. Water. That's
right,
what it comes
to. But 9 days, though, Jerome, in most people, they cannot think and they do die.
And they panic.
She was close to death. No, she was close to death.
Oh, okay, then. That's a different aspect.
So, I mean, it wasn't that, you know, she didn't drink water or something. She was dying. She was actively dying.
From dialysis? Possibly?
No, she was dying from not getting dialysis for 9 days. Plus, she lost a lot of blood. She hadn't been dialyzed correctly, am I right, Patty, way before this. So, I mean, it's not just 9 days. It was poor care for quite a period of time. She was actively dying. And water, you still drinking or watching your water, it's the potassium that will kill you. So you cannot drink water, but your electrolytes will go out of whack. But she received poor care all for quite a long time. And she was pretty much gone, wasn't she, Patty? When you
when she started bleed, you know, when her arm had started, her fistula had started bleeding, and that she lost like a two pints of blood, which they gave her blood back. But you know, you still didn't dialyze her, and you still didn't fix the fistula, which you had fixed the week before, and you had went in and cleaned it out, or the week before, you had worked with it, but then it's bleeding when some of your staff go in, and you tell me the reason why you can't fix their fistula is because of she could probably wouldn't know if she was bleeding at all because, you know, she has dementia. But her fistula never bleeds on its own unless it's touched or somebody's hurt. And it shouldn't be bleeding anyway, as many times as my Aunt Margie has taken her over to get it fixed.
Yeah, it's I just think the best way, and I think I told you in the hospital the best way. I mean, you did a lot of work, Patty, a lot of research and whatever, and by the time we got involved, it was critical.
Right. Right.
Is this from the vascular clinic?
Pardon?
When they did the declog, it was still bleeding from the vascular clinic after the surgery?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, it was. It was bleeding.
Well, see, they usually put a lot of pressure on it. Yeah.
No,
something was wrong.
The thing I believe, working in dialysis, not saying that I know 100% for certain, but this fistula was giving problem and bleeding for a long time, and it was never addressed. Is that correct, Patty?
Right. They kept trying to repair it.
So it was a faulty fistula, and I just think they didn't have anywhere else to put anything, and they would refuse to put a catheter in, if I remember. They said she was too weak.
Right, and now today she has a catheter in today from the other hospital that she's at right now.
Uh-huh.
And she dialyzed with that.
Okay.
Yesterday.
Well, she looked a lot better, you know, than the picture, you know, you sent. She looks like she's a lot more alert, too. She knows. She knows exactly. She was responding in the background as far as, you know, I think that she was also very upset over this. And I can't imagine how frightening this would be to anybody.
Yeah, I think you're talking about my Aunt Margie that was in the background.
Oh, okay.
She's the power of medical. She was, you know, upset, very upset that she thought it was unethical, you know, behavior for him to actually tell a lie repeatedly. And then he told me in the meeting, I forgot, that it would be inhumane to actually give her a dialysis. It was inhumane to not give her dialysis.
Yes. We've got less than a minute to go here.
Okay. Well,
Patty, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Marty.
Good to hear you,
Jerome,
guys.
Thank
again,
you.
Marty, Arlene. Thank you all also.
Pardon?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bye.
Jerome, it was good to hear from you too. Patty, thank you for coming on and telling your story.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Arlene.
And thank you for letting me interrupt, Pat. Marty.
But, yeah.
Bye.
We're not thanking you, Arlene. You just interrupt us anyway. Anyway, thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow night. Talk to you all later. Quit laughing, Jerome.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.